Gardening on C103 with Bandon Co-op Garden Centres in Bandon, Kinsale and Enniskeen. For top quality plants, advice and value, think Bandon Co-op Garden Centres.
C103.
I'm Peter Dowd of theirishgardener.com joining us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Peter.
Good afternoon, Patricia. How are you?
I'm very well, and you're very welcome. We've lots and lots of questions. Let's see if we can get through as many of them as possible, including an email in saying, could you please ask Peter the following question for me? I have two cherry blossom trees. One of them has no flowers whatsoever, and the other only has a handful. They're about 5 years old. Is there anything I can do? That's from a listener in Ballymacheira.
I'm hesitating there because I'm just wondering, like, they've been full flower right now. They should be, rather, until that heavy wind the other day put paid to all of them. It's always, you can set your calendar by the cherry blossoms that as soon as they're in full flower, we're going to get a heavy wind. and that's what happens.
And they have looked absolutely spectacular this year, the ones I've seen. They're just glorious.
They really
it's such
have.
A pity we don't get that long out of them.
I know. And it's on one of my bucket lists is to get over to Japan for what they call Sakura season, which is to see the Japanese cherries in full bloom and in their native habitat. But anyway, coming back to the query about the ones that aren't flowering, it's most likely one of two things, or maybe both, a lack in potassium and phosphorus in the soil. It's not to say that the soil is bad or the wrong pH or anything like that. It just might be lacking in one or two of those essential elements. They're essential for the promotion of flower, potassium and phosphorus. So a good tomato food or even sulfate of potash, unfortunately, it's too late to remedy the situation for this year. But going forward for next year, hopefully, if you feed them now and a few times during the season, with sulfate of potash or a good, like, nature safe tomato food, that will certainly help. The other option that it might be, but that's kind of why I was hesitating, it's only 5 years old, but it could just need a bit of pruning, a bit of careful pruning it down in height and width, just to try and create more new growth this year for buds for next year. So I would do both. I would give it a bit of a prune. I wouldn't prune it till later on towards the end of the summer, and feed it with tomato food and sulfate of potash, I would say 4 or 5 times between now, let's say, and the end of August.
Okay, gardening question for Peter, please. I've got a pink rhododendron in flower now. I want to relocate it to another part of the garden. It's between 2.5 and 3 feet tall. Any advice, please?
What's more important than its height, actually, is the age of it, because the height doesn't give a clue to that, because some of them could be 2.5, 3 feet tall and 20 years old, and others might only be a year old in that height, depending on the variety, if you know what I mean. And the reason that's important is because if that's only been in the soil for a year or two, then that'll move quite easily. Now, don't dream of moving it, no matter how long it's been in. Don't dream of moving it right now or during the spring or summer months, because it'll 99% sure it won't survive that transplant if you do it now. However, if you do it during December, January, which is the correct time to do it, you do stand the best chance of it surviving. You will probably, I would say nearly definitely, by moving it in December, January, you will lose the flowers for the following year. The buds could just fall off. But I mean, the plant itself should survive if you do it during December, January. But I'm going to qualify that by saying it does depend on the age. There's an inherent risk in moving any established plant, and evergreens like rhododendrons and camellias can be quite difficult to move. So there is a risk. Get as big a root ball as possible. So a good rule of thumb is if you were to drop a piece of thread, Trish, from the outermost leaf of the plant to the ground, that's the size of the root ball you want. Obviously, that's not always practical. But if possible, get as big a root ball as possible. Move it during December, January, straight into his new home. And the following year, no, don't dream of doing it now, as I say. So the following year, which would be next year, give it loads and loads and loads of TLC and plenty of water during the first summer after it's been moved.
Okay, Eileen in Carrig, Navarre, Griselinia hedge. It's about 20 years old. Near both ends, the hedge is dying. We sprayed with a blight spray, but now we can see other parts of it's going as well. What can we do?
Difficult one to answer without seeing it, but I'm going to give as good a guess as I can. I mean, that it's most likely a fungal infection, unfortunately, like Phytophthora. And really, the only weapons in the armory when we come to any fungal infection, and Phytophthora, whilst it's a notifiable disease and that we should be telling the Department of Agriculture if you have it or if you suspect it, the course of action is the same, as I say, for most, and that is cultural control, which is to remove as much of the infected growth as possible. So if it's dying off at the beginning and the end of the hedge, I would suggest, and I know you're not going to like this, but I would suggest kind of removing the plants that are infected nearly entirely, roots and all, to get that disease away from the hedge. Any place that it's spreading to, then, because it will spread, and I hate to tell you, but it'll probably wipe out the whole hedge if you don't get on top of it. Perhaps you already know that, and that's why you're ringing. So remove as much of the infected growth as possible. As I say, if it's possible on the edges, get out the root system as well, and then prune back. You're not allowed to prune your hedge as such at the moment under the Wildlife Act, but if you're pruning out some diseased material, I think that's okay. Then what you want to do is to treat it with copper sulfate. Now, they've already used a blight spray, which may have been copper sulfate, but that on its own won't be enough. You do need to remove the disease material physically. Drench it and the soil around it with copper sulfate mixed with water, and then feed the hedge. And also what's important, and it's hygiene. We're all experts now over the last 12 months, Trish, on disease control, right? Yeah. And it's hygiene, and it's the same in the garden. So if you leave diseased leaves around the base of that plant, it's only going to get back into the soil, so you need to move it. And even simple things that you might not think of, but they were drummed into us in college, and they're so true, that when you're pruning an infected bush or an infected branch, clean that pruners before you start pruning a clean branch, because you're just going to spread the disease that way. So it's hygiene is very, very important. Remove the infected growth, keep the area around it clean, drench it with something like copper sulfate and feed it. And again, I would go back to the Nature Safe, the organic seaweed feed, or else the granular or Nature Safe feed around the base of it. And that'll kind of strengthen the plant and make it hopefully more resistant to infection.
Yeah, I know a number of years ago, including a Griselinia hedge between my house and my neighbour's house, that we lost that, and half the neighbourhood lost their Griselinia hedge all over one summer.
Over one summer or one winter?
Over one season. Like, when Yeah, 2010.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Morning. This is Michael in Bantry. Morning, Peter. I have a tree fern that has new fronds appearing, about 10 of them. I cut the existing fronds. They were brown in colour, and I cut them before the frost. Should I have done that, says Michael?
Well, the frost was late this year, so I'm guessing Michael cut them, like, you know, before the frost that we got in the last month. So I'm not worried about that. So the short answer to the question is you're fine. I think you're fine. The new fronds are emerging. The old ones do need to be cut back. I wouldn't have done it before April, mind you. So in other words, those old fronds can be used to protect the base of the plant, or the crown of the plant, Trish, from frost damage. So I certainly wouldn't do it kind of January, February, anything like that. You'd normally wait till the risk of frost has passed, which in fairness, he more or less did. April would be fine time really to prune it. And I still think he's fine, because any frost that we did get in April was largely superficial. So I think he's fine.
You'll be okay. Okay, I've got a camellia, says Angela, in Inishannon. It's gone very yellow. What can I feed it with?
Well, yellowing of the leaves of a camellia is a telltale sign that it's lacking in iron. It could be magnesium, but 9 times out of 10 it's iron. And it's a thing called lime-induced chlorosis normally. So what that means in effect, Trish, is that camellias like to grow in an acid soil, or that's a soil with a pH of 7 or slightly below it, okay? So they will grow in an alkaline soil, which is a soil with a pH higher than 7, but they won't thrive. And this is how they show that they're not thriving. They're not getting enough of the nutrients that they need. So the leaves begin to go yellow, because whilst there might be iron in the soil, without getting too technical, it's not available to the camellia at that pH. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what you need to do, the solution to it is you need to give that camellia iron in a form that is available to it in a soil that has the wrong pH, if you can understand me. Okay. So that is chelated iron or sequestered iron. So get yourself, any garden center will have, it'll be called either sequestered iron or chelated iron, or there's loads and loads of brands that they call themselves acid plant tonics or ericaceous plant tonics, and they're all based on chelated iron. So that's what you need to do. And you need to do it, depending on which brand you get, it'll say it on the box anyway, but you would need to apply it a few times each year. And that'll be an ongoing maintenance job, if you like. That's something you'll have to do every year, I would say.
Dennis in Skibbereen said, "Hi, Peter, could you ever explain to me about grafting? I have a pink camellia about 10 years old, and I've tried grafting red and white branches on onto it, but they both failed last autumn. Is there a special way of doing it? And is autumn the right time? Thanking you, Dennis and Skibbereen.
Well, how long have we got, Dennis and Skibbereen? It's not as simple as it is made out. I'm not actually sure if camellias are grafted. I don't think they normally are grafted. But very briefly, we use grafting to grow plants when they don't grow successfully or overly successfully by from cuttings or from seeds or from any other type of propagation. So what you would normally do is we get a rootstock plant. So apple trees, for example, roses, all these things are very often grafted. And without trying to get too far into it, we graft it onto the rootstock. So we will grow, let's say, a crab apple from seed, okay? Because that will grow very successfully from seed. But the reason we won't grow maybe Pink Lady or Golden Delicious, we may not grow them from seed because they won't necessarily come true to type. So in other words, if you set the seed of a Pink Lady apple into the ground, you won't necessarily get a Pink Lady tree, okay? So a lot of plants won't come true to type, a lot of hybrids won't come true to type from seed, so we need to graft them. So we'll grow a seedling of a crab apple and then we graft a piece of the Pink Lady or whichever one we want onto that. Now it's quite a specialist job. Depending on whether we're budding or grafting and the type of grafting we've done, it's all done during the winter months anyway, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's very specialist and you've got to match up the cambia. It is difficult, it's tricky, but it's not rocket science. It's doable. You have to match up the cambium, which is the layer just inside the bark of the rootstock to the graft. And that union is all important. It's too technical for me to get into as a quick answer on this program, Trish. The time to do grafting is during the winter months, but it's a bit more specialist than just grafting one stem onto an existing plant. You really need to remove most of the rootstock at the same time.
It's not as easy. Here's a lovely question from Maura. Advice, please. I want to convert a section of my existing lawn into a wild meadow. I've heard of covering the area in wet cardboard, then adding a layer of compost, then setting the seeds. Would this work? Would bark mulch on top be a waste of time? Thanking you for any advice from Maura.
Do you know what Maura is doing there now is, and I mean this with the greatest of respect, Maura, but you're actually nearly drawing more work on yourself than what you need to. Okay. So you could do one of two things. Well, you could do one of several things, but first of all, you could actually do nothing. Okay. So just leave the grass that you want to turn into a wildflower meadow. Just leave it go. Just stop mowing it and don't put any plant food or fertilizer or weed killer or anything on it. And you'll be amazed to see what will happen over the next few years. It'll become quite species rich, I would imagine, all on its own. There's an organization or a program in Northern Ireland, and it's called Don't Mow, Let It Grow. So it's for the public spaces. You know, down here we have the All Ireland Pollinator Plan. Well, in the north they have the Don't Mow, Let It Grow, and for a lot of public areas that's what they're doing. That's what they're encouraging their local authorities to do up there, and they're finding that they just left alone, you're getting all these natural wildflowers back. But so you could do that, but if you wanted to start from scratch, and just, you're on the right track with the cardboard over the grass, certainly, but don't use compost. Compost is too rich because wildflower seeds, they actually want a very nutrient-poor soil. They want, for want of a better expression, they want kind of crap soil, Trish. So pardon the term, but a very poor soil, right? That has never or hasn't had fertilizer or plant food or anything in it for a long time. So compost is going to be far too rich. And then no need for bark mulch on top of it either. So put down the cardboard if you want on top of the grass, wet it so it begins to break down. Cover it with some poor soil, not compost. Much better word than the previous one. and then put down your seed and water it, and then that's more than enough for you.
And let us know how you get on, Maura. We would love photographs of that. Hi, Peter. I have leather jackets in my garden. I'm trying to source nematodes, but I can't find them anywhere. Would you know where I could get some, or is there anywhere else I can get rid of them?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nematodes are good for leather jackets. the reason I'm hesitating again though is because I'm just not sure. There was Super Nemo, which was an Irish product, which is a kind of combination of nematodes. And what nematode is, for those who are scratching their heads, it's a biological control, so it's a non-chemical control. So based on the principle that if you have a garden pest, be it the leather jacket or vine weevil or slugs and snails, you can introduce its predator, a parasitic pest, to feed on it. So there is an Irish product called Super Nemos that is a combination of different nematodes, if you like. So they'll attack vine weevil, leather jackets, and other ones in the soil. But I'm just not so sure how available that is anymore, unfortunately, because I know I was looking for it last year and it was difficult to get, and it was a great product. So I don't have a magic answer to it. I'm off the top of my head, I'm not sure where you'll get it. I'm sorry.
Okay, if anybody knows, let us know. We can pass it on to that listener. Hi, Peter. I've been trying to grow campanula and arborita for years on the entrance walls of my drive, and all I have is a big bushy plant but no flowers. Help.
Okay, but at least you have a plant. You have a plant. You know, the campanulas and the arboretas are the ones that you'd notice, particularly at the moment, the arboreta. It's flowing out of old stone walls and country roads. I just absolutely adore it. Purple flowers, purple colour. So I thought that the question was going, but I haven't been able to get it to establish, but they have, but it's just not flowering. So I would say in that situation, it's not really a question of potassium or nutrients or anything like that, because they'll tend to flower away again in poor soil. I wonder, is it getting enough sunlight? My best guess there, I'm afraid, is that wall is too shaded and it's not getting enough sunlight, because arboretum in particular won't flower. Campanula will, but not as well. But arboreta certainly will not flower unless it's in a good full sun position. And I'm afraid, I think if that rings true for the caller, then I'm afraid, bar moving your wall,
I was just going to say, that's not an easy thing to move the wall. Okay, then Paul has a question about a tulip, and there's a number of about daffodils, so it's really the same question. Paul says, hi, what should I do about my tulips? They finished flowering. Should I let the leaves die back? Should I take them out of the pots? Are the ones that are in the ground, will I just leave them in the ground? And similar questions coming in about daffodils.
Okay, I'm going to answer them all as kind of one, Trish, in that with all these spring flowering bulbs, tulips, daffodils, all of these guys, yes, leave the flower wither on the stem, leave it go off, and then let the foliage wither as well, because the chlorophyll and all the nutrients that are in those leaves will go back into that bulb or those bulbs, and that they then are the food reserves for next year's flowers and next year's foliage. So let them all die off naturally and gradually back into the bulb. It's a good time, as they're beginning to turn brown, as they're beginning to die off, to feed them with the good quality tomato food, again, like the Irish one, the Nature Safe tomato food, that'll bring the potassium and phosphorus back into that bulb to build up the food reserve for next year. So let them die off gradually. Don't cut them off too early. Some people will tie them up in an elastic band, and that I don't have the patience for that. I just let them die back in their own time. Then, do we let them in the ground or do we let them in pots? So this is where I'll differentiate, if you like. So the daffodils, I think you're fine. Leave them in the ground, lift them every maybe 4, 5 or 6 years just to divide them, because they'll have got too congested and they can go blind. But daffodils will survive in the ground really if left from year to year. Tulips, less so. So the textbook, if you like, will say that some tulips will do better than others if left in the ground, and some treat just as an annual. I would say if you want to be sure of getting the tulips back next year, lift them out of the ground or lift them out of pots. You're more likely that they will survive in pots than in the open ground. But ideally, I think take the tulips out once the foliage has died back, and then wrap them in a bit of newspaper or paper bag or something like that, and plant them out again. But don't plant them out too early in the autumn. Tulips do best, I think, if planted late autumn, kind of November time, even right into December, January, when it's good and cold. But I would, to be sure of getting my tulips back next year, I would take them out each year. I don't do it, of course, after giving that advice. I'm very lazy and I plant new tulips each year. Yeah.
Quick question in from John. How many times can you use bluestone on roses? I've already given one application to my roses already. Bluestone.
Well, bluestone, which is just another term for copper sulfate, Trish, and it is regarded and it's licensed as an organic fungicide. It's safe to use for organic gardening. However, it does come with the caveat that it's under guidance, if you like. And really what that under guidance means is that you use it once a year, or maximum of twice a year. Okay. I would always try and err on the side of once a year. So it's the timing of the if it is so important. So with roses, and when I recommend it as a drench to prevent fungal infections, the best time to put it down is what we refer to as bud burst, which is something that we're kind of just really in the middle of, or just maybe towards the end of. It's when it's a magical time of the year, Tricia, we're in at the moment, when all the energy from the soil begins to come out through the dormant buds of the trees and the shrubs, and everything is just bursting back into growth. That's what we refer to as bud burst. That's the best time to get the copper sulfate on, because it's the tree is actively growing and there's no sign of infection yet, or the rose bush is actively growing.
Okay,
so if you've done it now, I would leave it for this year.
Okay, all right, very quickly, a listener wants to know, when can she put out her summer bedding plants and hanging baskets?
Ask the weather forecast.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
as we're not going to get frost.
Yeah, and there is frost forecast for tonight. Okay, we leave it there. Thank you for that, Peter. Have a lovely week.
And you, thanks, Trish.
And we'll talk again next week. That is Peter Dowdle of the Irish Gardener.com.